Hello, welcome to the Tuesday night discussion group. We are excited about this. Tonight's going to be, we're going to be talking about conditioning. Chapter 15 of Steve Wozniak's Great Pain Deception. This will be the name of it's conditioning, the chapter here. Conditioning, the first cut is the deepest. And this is a very, very important discussion tonight, guys. So you get started listening tonight. Go ahead and finish listening because we're going to be talking about a lot of important stuff that will really help you in your recovery, okay? Now, with that being said, the main disclaimer, before we start, I tell everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. Now, again, like I said, you start listening, go ahead and listen to the end. Make sure if you've ever listened to them before and you say you get 30 or 40 minutes in, make sure you listen to this whole podcast tonight, okay? Because conditioning is like one of the main things that you need to know to heal, okay? So with that being said, I'm going to let Bruce, MC, say your summary.
Yeah, well, to summarize briefly this chapter, which I don't think you really can because it's
good luck.
one of the cruxes or hard points of the TMS recovery process. And this is my attempt to summarize chapter 15 of the Great Pain Deception. By Stephen Ray Ozanić, 2011, and it's entitled Conditioning, the First Cut is the Deepest. Now, many people have posted on the RTMS forum saying they are in pain when they sit down at the computer. Some say the pain starts immediately, while others say it starts after 15 minutes or more. Some stand up when they work on the computer to avoid back pain. Now, Steve speaks of conditioning in this chapter, actually on page 205. He says that conditioning is immediate and powerful, and it is the process of being continually victimized by your own memory. The same memory experiences generate the same results in perpetuity until new experiences replace existing ones, until the conditioned response has been repatterned. An experiential makeover.
Can we elaborate on that? Can we elaborate on what you just said? That sentence about that.
That's why it's going to be so difficult to summarize this because each thing you say calls up more and more examples. Yeah, go ahead.
that last sentence. Could you re-say that last sentence again?
Okay. This is what Steve's speaking now. The same sensory experiences generate the same results in perpetuity until new experiences replace existing ones, until the conditioned response has been repatterned, or we would say reprogrammed, an experiential makeover.
So in other words,
most fundamental level too. This gets into the limbic system, into the brain. And
so in other words, we keep doing the same thing, like keeping focused on the body and not learning and not knowing what we're going to learn tonight. Then what's going to happen is, we're going to keep experiencing the same pain year after year.
Well,
go ahead.
I was thinking about this tonight at the gym before I came up here, and I was thinking about how pervasive programming is and patterning is in all of our behavior. For example, if you do a gymnastic routine, the first time you do it, you intellectualize about it, and you're not very efficient, and you're herky-jerky, and then you do it a number of times, and progressively with each repetition, it gets easier, because you're no longer intellectualizing about it. I guess us neuroscientists, amateur neuroscientists would say, when you're first learning the routine, you're using your prefrontal cortex, you're intellectualizing about it, and you're trying to control the limbic system. But after a while, the limbic system has learned the gymnastic routine, and then you're doing it over and over again more easily, using less force until it becomes a program pattern. And this happens learning languages. It's pervasive. It goes throughout all of our experience.
And we call it now, reconditioning. I mean, well, basically reconditioning, right?
To relearn and to reprogram yourself, you have to do some fundamental brain work. Because it's taken a long time for you to learn this gymnastic routine called TMS.
Well, you have to have the awareness, right?
You have to become aware of it. Mm-hmm.
And then you start reprogramming.
Yeah, because when you're doing the gymnastic routine, you're not intellectualizing about it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's become a programmed pattern that you can repeat again and again and again. I guess it's got something to do with Steve's previous chapter on memegrams. Now, he opens the chapter with he quotes a classic quote from John E. Sarno, MD's Healing Back Pain, about the process of conditioning. Now, Dr. Sarno says the process of conditioning or programming seems to be very important in determining when the person with TMS will have pain. For example, a common complaint of people with low back pain, as we said before, is that it is invariably brought on by sitting. This is such a benign activity, one is mystified by the fact that it initiates pain. The brain makes the association between sitting and the presence of pain, and that person is now programmed to expect pain while sitting. They also have learned to associate activity with pain. They expect it, so it happens. That is conditioning. And Steve found that this statement by Dr. Sarno was spot on in his own healing. Whenever I would sit down, the blood would withdraw and the pain would come knocking at my back door. So it happened that I was in a high tension state once and had a strike of pain when I sat down. At that moment, I was instantly conditioned to expect pain when I sat, and so it returned every time I did so. Once it's understood that sitting can never cause pain, the brain's conditioned response begins reversing strategy until the tactic no longer works as a distractionary technique. I've never heard that word before, but yeah.
But that would be like that answer to what I'd said a while ago about reconditioning. Once you understand that the sitting is not what's the pain, then you can start the reconditioning, correct?
Yeah, once you intellectualize about it and get a handle on it intellectually, then you can start to deprogram it. Before, when it's totally unconscious, when you haven't brought it into your conscious field of awareness, then it keeps running of its own accord, its own entropy, its own pattern.
It's like learning the new habit again, a new habit of not focusing on the body.
Yeah, Steve quotes from a essay on the neurobiology of emotions, how therapy can repattern our limbic system, by Tian Dayton, by a PhD, TEP. And he quotes on this first page from this essay Dr. Tian Dayton says, emotional and psychological pain, in fact, all emotional learning, is held in our bodies, recorded on our vast interrelated neural networks. This is why when we're scared, anxious, or angry, we have physical reactions like muscle tension, stomach churning, shortness of breath, head pounding, and aching back. Until we honestly confront and work through our deeper truths, our bodies will hold us responsible for what we can't remember. But in her essay on the limbic system, she says a bit more about this. She says, altering deep emotional patterns imprinted onto our limbic system is slow and painstaking work. The limbic system sets the mind's emotional tone, filters external events through internal states, creates emotional coloring, tags event as internally important, stores highly charged emotional memories, modulates motivation, controls appetite and sleep cycles, promotes bonding, and directly processes the sense of smell and modulates libido, according to Daniel Amen, MD, author of Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. Moreover, our neural networks are not easily altered, says Thomas Lewis, MD, in A General Theory of Love. He says that early emotional experiences knit long-lasting patterns into the very fabric of the brain's neural networks. Dr. Lewis explains, changing that matrix calls for a different kind of medicine altogether. And she goes on, Dr. Dayton, she says, our emotional life is physical. It imprints itself in our bodies. When we have problems in our deep limbic system, they can manifest in moodiness, irritability, clinical depression, increased negative thinking, negative perceptions of events, decreased motivation, floods of negative emotion, appetite and sleep problems, decreased or increased sexual responsiveness, or social isolation, says Dr. Amen. Our neural system carries with it our emotional sense memories from childhood. Familiar smells, sounds, or places can send a cascade of memories flooding through us that either wraps us up in the warmth or challenges to maintain our composure. Along with the memories comes the cognitive sense we made of what happened at the time. That's why when we go to the circus with our children, we too can feel like a child again. Or when we get hurt by someone we love, we can also feel like a kid again. So this kind of conditioning is very deep. It touches on the region where emotion and memories are stored in the primitive child brain, you would say, in the limbic system. Steve goes on from there to talk about what Deepak Chopra says when he restates the above as, I use my memories, but I don't allow my memories to use me. Mm. And Steve gives various examples of programmed pain symptoms, like from Ailsa, the girl who found that she could only wear one pair of flip-flops that didn't hurt. And whenever she put on any other boots, her boots on or her UGG boots or her...
This is what I was waiting on you to get into. Go ahead.
And Steve says that Ailsa's is a beautiful story of the human will to overcome through expanding awareness. In other words, she broke the pain pathway patterns by changing her shoes. I can see that Forrest would like to comment on that. She breaks the pattern that she'd always lived according to by changing into different kinds of shoes and forcing herself to perform even with her boots on. And this, I guess, sent a message to her brain that she wasn't going to be fooled anymore by this nonsense.
But any other pair of shoes, Bruce, was always hurt her. Any other pair of shoes other than those boots would always hurt her, right?
I think she has. Did she have some flip-flops?
Sandals.
Sandals, yeah, that's what it
is. She had only one thing she could wear.
She even became wheelchair bound.
Uh-huh.
Her feet hurt so much. I wonder if this is the woman that went to Dr. Sarno on television on Oprah. She sounded like that, where she could not use her feet at all, and she had to go everywhere with a little electronic cart. And
Jeanette Barber was her name. Yeah,
but this is a similar example.
Very similar.
Phenomena. Yeah. And you notice also some of those quotes from Dr. Dayton. You see the social isolation there that comes along with it in this deep limbic structure. There are a whole bunch of other associations here.
She healed through the knowledge.
With the program pain patterns. That's why I think people have anxiety and depression because when they are when they've been programmed this way with TMS, because they're getting into that deep limbic structure where emotions and memories reside, because that's the same place that the programming, that the conditioning occurred. And so these things are all jostling. They're next door to it, next door to the programming. I don't know how it all works, you know, but obviously when you get back into that, those programmed pain responses, you're also touching on childhood memories too. And what Dr. Dayton recommends for getting rid of these this stuff, for deprogramming it, is pretty interesting. She suggests journaling. She recommends talking and sharing feelings and informing clients that body therapies, including massage, can be very helpful, make you feel better. Encourage clients to spend time with those they love. Cultivate positive thinking, promote breath awareness, which is what you do in mindfulness meditation by regulating your breath, encourage body awareness, suggest relaxation, meditation, prayer, or some combination of these, promote exercise, that goes with return to a full range of physical activity, as Dr. Sarno said. She recommends warm baths, and encourage trust in the therapeutic process by finding someone, a therapist that you trust too. And this is the background for this chapter that Steve is drawing on. He quotes in the section on the dynamic mind-body, Steve quotes Deepak Chopra in Body, Mind, and Soul, and where he speaks of the body renewing itself approximately once a year through cell replacement as cells continually die off and are replaced by new ones. Thus, the body is essentially an entirely new one every year or so. But then Dr. Chopra is often asked, why then do I still have my arthritis and clogged arteries if you're rebuilding your body every year? It is clear the conditioning patterns that cycle pain and other mind-body symptoms are the result of the same Ouroboros circle of patterned information. Or as Chopra phrased it in Body, Mind, and Soul, through conditioning, we generate the same impulses of information and energy, which is not merely the same thoughts and feelings and emotions and ideas, but also the same behaviors, the same dietary habits, the same sensory experiences of the world. And as a result of that, we, of course, engender the same states of information and energy that transform themselves into the same biochemical events, the same physiological events, the same behavioral patterns, and ultimately the same outcomes of disease. He's saying that these programs are self-perpetuating and also result in bad health, because we never go back into the limbic system and rearrange, decondition and deprogram all of our assumptions. This is a big process.
Does anybody want to
say this isn't just deprogramming yourself about back pain when you sit in front of the computer? It involves a general makeover of your psyche at the unconscious level. Perhaps a place never gone before, never visited before.
The conditioning's like it's become second nature. It's become a habit. It's become ingrained into the unconscious or subconscious. It's in there. And what we have to do is go in and recondition, or reprogram, whichever you want to call it. It's like making a new habit all over again, the way you used to think back when you was a child before you or a kid or a person before you was hurt. Does anybody want to elaborate on that? I want to get into
Thing.
You got a few more.
Steve says that the problem that you're articulating, Herbie, is the problem is that people aren't viewing or reviewing their lives, and so they never change, resulting in the same symptoms. The surgery, injection, drugs, and therapy allow them to continue on their same condition path. And that's the trouble with the kind of treatments, symptomatic treatments that are often applied to TMS-like symptoms, like back pain, knee pain, foot pain, RSI, the whole kit and caboodle. So, yeah, so Steve answers that question.
Mm. Does anybody want to talk about something you might be conditioned to that maybe we can elaborate on together that might, you know, give some people some ideas on how they can help themselves? Anybody got a conditioning in the past that you've done recovered from that you didn't know it was conditioning until you started understanding TMS knowledge therapy? And then later you understood it was conditioned and you recovered. Or you might be going through it now and recovering.
Well, I think that's the story of my life, actually. Okay. I'm wondering if it isn't the story of most of our lives. I mean, we're conditioned. I think we're conditioned before we even come into this world. We're listening to sounds outside, and it's affecting our brain development, you know. I don't know who somebody said, who was it? Now I can't. Oh, I know who. Bruce Lipton. He said that he's seen a video of a fetus, and the parents are fighting, and mm-hmm. the fetus just going nuts in there.
That's exactly what Gabor, incidentally, what Gabor Mate says.
Yeah.
And the body says no. He may be relying on Lipton's research.
Yeah, well, it's amazing because really, I mean, conditioning are us. And we're conditioned right from the get-go. And so we just have to really, I think we have to really make the decision to consciously uncondition ourselves from all the things that really are not in keeping with our core values and our the real goals, you know, of our soul, for want of a better word. It's you know, because otherwise life is all life, the pattern that we're following, and if that's not a happy pattern, it's got to change.
Okay.
How you do that?
Hearts.
Yeah, there
you go. Come on, you knew best that. Yeah, talk to your parts. You
yeah,
know, I mean, I know it.
$64 question, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it takes a while to wrap your head around all of that, but I mean, it's so easy once you're doing it. Like now, I'm getting to the stage where I just think of myself as a real self and a whole bunch of unruly kid parts. And I just got to keep them in line and keep them loved up and keep them happy and send them on their way when, you know, when they're feeling better and run my life center. And it's, I don't know, it's been a miracle to me, really.
So you think the divided mind is at the root of the tension behind TMS, the tension myoneural syndrome?
Oh, I do think so, yeah.
Yeah. It gets back to something as simple as that, doesn't it?
And it's so simple, and yet it's the kind of simple that's true, you know? It's the kind of thing, I mean, complicating things is often such a mistake. But to get back to this, to realize how simple life really is
okay. And Julie, you want to say anything else?
No, I think.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Okay. Well, the first page here, in Steve's chapter 15, the first thing he mentions or starts talking about is actually. I'm going to read it. It's about expectancy. And it's actually from John Sarno. It says, they have learned to associate activity with pain. They expect it, so it happens. This is conditioning. So,
absolutely.
So, anything in your life that, you know, you've expected, and, you know, as the years passed, you understood that you got better by, you know, stop expecting it, stop focusing on it, stop fearing it?
Well, I had an experience, and I think maybe I've talked about this before, but anyway, I'll just say it briefly again, is that I'm diabetic, and I was working really hard on lowering my weight, and I was down to about 160 pounds, and I'm 5'6". So that wasn't bad at all. And I was still losing like maybe, you know, 2-3 pounds a month. And I was walking a lot and feeling really good. I went to the doctor and she found that my blood sugar was kind of wacky and out of control. So she said to me, you got to lose another 10 pounds. And I said, well, I am. I mean, within a month or so, I'll have lost that. She said, no, you got to do it right now. And I said, well, that doesn't really work for me, because if I push myself like that, something bites back and I end up putting the weight back on, you know, so I'm better off to do it real slow. And she said, well, I'm your doctor, and if you want me to treat you, you're going to have to lose 10 pounds and just get on with it, you know, in the next month, right? So I thought, oh, for pity's sake. So I thought, well, you really should listen to your doctor, you know. So I went out and I decided I was going to walk an hour a day, and it was really hot outside. So I put on a pair of flip-flops and out I went, and I got back from my walk and I was still mad, you know, because I didn't want to walk for an hour in the heat, and I didn't want to lose 10 pounds in a month when I know what it does to me, you know. So I turned on the TV, and there was a noon broadcast on, you know, just a news show. And they had a thing on there about how if you wear flip-flops, you'll get plantar fasciitis.
Cause and effect.
Within 24 hours, I had both feet, and I was crippled, completely crippled for the next 2 years. 2 years.
Well, there you go. There's conditioning.
Yeah, and I would have, now I would know, A, not to believe it, and B, not to put up with it when it happened, but I had no idea. I just thought, well, gee, isn't that too bad? I can't, you know, walk for an hour in 90, 100 degree heat in my flip-flops, right? And I was actually kind of pleased. You know, but I wasn't happy about the pain. But I thought, oh well, it didn't for 2 years. It was like, what a price to pay, because you're letting somebody else run your life. You're letting a nocebo run your life.
Yes,
that's a great story.
It sure is. You want to say any more on that? Enjoy. Oh,
that's for me. No, that's the story.
Does anybody? Okay, I want to mention one more thing, and I know that this is going to be directed towards Jay. You on here, Jay?
Okay.
It says this is the second paragraph on page 204 of Steve's chapter 15. It says it's understood that sitting can never cause pain. The brain's conditioned response begins reversing strategy until the tactic no longer works as a distractionary technique. In other words, I'm going to lay that out, what it's saying there. You understand the part about the pain and the sitting and all that, because you healed before from sarnal 10 years ago. But the second part he's talking about is when you hold in your mind long enough that it no longer can bother you, that you will heal. So can you elaborate on that, Jay?
I heal several ways, but many years ago, but I never did really get rid of all of the sitting problem. That has been probably the biggest thing that I've had to confront. And one little thing about reconditioning that I found, it's just a little simple thing, but it's mentioned in the literature about programming your mind to think about another area of your body. Mm-hmm. And I found that works for me.
I like
very
that.
Much. It works for sure. It doesn't just wipe it out, but it really works. If I think about it, if I'm thinking about my low back and I'm trying to do some exercises or I'm sitting, whatever it is, if I just start maybe thinking about my right knee and just focus on my right knee or maybe my right elbow and get my mind completely off of that region over on the right side of my body somewhere, it seems to work a pretty good bit for me.
Steve says that
the only other thing about reprogramming, reconditioning is at one point in time, some 17, 18 years ago, about the time I discovered I'd known about this for about a year at the time, I won't go into these details, it's not needed anyway, but I was so crippled, I couldn't work. I hadn't worked in a year. I hadn't done anything, and I really thought that I could not reach down and pick up 5 pounds from the floor. I knew I could. I knew I was strong enough to do that. But I figured that if I did, it would just absolutely pull me in two. That's how I felt about it. Mm-hmm. And one night there was an emergency at my house. In the dead of the night, I'll say that it was 9, 10 o'clock at night. And from a very unorthodox, not symmetrical at all position, I had to pick up from the ground 125 pounds of weight. It was an absolute emergency. Now I was totally psyched up. Believe me, I was. I know. I understand that. I know the. You know, the man picks up the tractor effect and all of that, and the adrenaline was flowing. But I did it. I picked that 125 something pounds up, and moved it from a very unorthodox position. And
it's a lot of
weight. Because my thinking was somewhere else. After it was over, I said, you know, first of all, I do not know how I did that. Secondly, I will pay for this later. And ladies and gentlemen, I never had the first consequence from that. Nothing.
Even though you expected it.
I caught it in the act. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I expected it.
Even though you expected it, you still didn't get the pain, and that's good.
I still did not get the pain. I expected it. I didn't get it immediately. First of all, I didn't think I could pick up the weight. I didn't have time to think about it. Later, I said, "How in the world did I pick up that weight?" But I did. Then I said, you know, I had no effects from it. I figured it would pull me in two. I had none of that. Then I said to myself, well, you'll pay for this, and it may be 2 or 3 days or 3 or 4 days, but it's coming. But it never came.
Mm-hmm.
This is the truth as I know it to be the absolute truth. It sounds like some kind of stretching I've done, but it's not. That is the truth, y'all. I wouldn't lie to you.
That's awesome.
You were distracted.
And of course, when you're dealing with somebody my age, it's over a long period of time. Lots of things have happened. You know, like I said, that was some 17 years ago. But
you
were
distracted
caught it in the act.
From your programming.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have time to think.
Right. As far as the sitting,
if we can get our brain out of
really
the way,
if I can get my brain out of the way, that is
yep.
Oh. Look, if you have to threaten me with a cobra snake or a pistol to the gun to the side, whatever you got to do, but if it takes something extreme to get my mind out of the way, but if you ever can defocus it, the stuff will stop, whatever's going on.
Well, that's what
and,
you.
As soon as
you
I refocus, as soon as I refocus, it'll come back.
I can relate to that story. I used to. Absolutely love a computer game called Unreal Tournament 2004. And I, you know, all my problems were about typing. It was same as what you were saying. You know, if I type now, I'm going to pay for it later. That's the way it works with people who are diagnosed with repetitive strain injury, that it's the repetitive strain of typing that has injured you. And, but I do remember that when I played Unreal Tournament, seemed to get away with it.
Exactly.
That blood was flowing, and you know and I wasn't thinking about it. I was thinking about the game. I was thinking about killing those bad guys.
It grabbed your attention.
I remember when I was a teenager, I used to swag around on the weekend sometimes because my mom wanted me to do housework, and maybe there was nothing happening with my friends, so I was just, and I'd get myself a heck of a headache, hey? And then several, you know, sometimes some friend would show up at the door, especially if it was a boy I liked, bang, no headache. Just like that. Just like
there
that.
You go.
Was absolute magic.
Now on the other end of the rope, we got Tom over here, and I want him to elaborate a little bit, because I know he's been not focusing, he's been not fearing, working on something. I take my hat off to him. I've always looked up to Tom, and he's done beat just about everything you can imagine, and he's got this one issue, I think, still. Right, Tom, the hip?
Yeah, my right butt.
But you fight it every day. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Thanks for the kind words. Yeah, I go out and play tennis every weekend this past Saturday, 8:30 to 12:30 straight through without a break. And, thank you. Playing sets, practicing, hitting as many balls as I can. Then I run in the pool for a half hour vigorously and go to work, so I'm doing everything I want to do, but still a big pain in the ass. And in fact, this week I heard something from my ex. She underwent a treatment in Tucson called radio frequency ablation, where it cauterizes the nerve. And I actually made an appointment with a surgeon's office, but I got this flu, and I was supposed to go tomorrow, so I canceled it. And I was thinking, well, I don't care. Whatever works. You know, I've been dealing with this for 15 years. And Steve's book, which we're talking about tonight, is giving me great hope because he's dealt with it much more severe form and much longer than I have. So if he can get over it after years and years, then that gives me hope I can too. So, but I'm still open to it. If it kills the incorrect pain thing, and if it's something that's relatively non-invasive, like getting a root canal, then I'm okay with it. It does say it comes back, the nerves come back, but hell, you know, I'm just curious now about it. And I find it complementary to TMS, in a way. I mean, you still go to the dentist and get feelings, so. But Eric, thank you for reminding me about what Steve had in his book about sitting. And Jason, because Jason a couple of weeks ago said he could not get into that nice, I think, a Tundra or taco truck of his because it hurt to sit.
Yeah. The Toyota.
Okay, so
Tundra,
Jason, how is it? Have you been able in the last 2 weeks sit in your truck and drive?
You know, I haven't tested it to that effect, but driving around town, short runs, 30, 40 minutes maybe, at a time, seemingly it hasn't bothered me as much with the sitting in the truck driving now in the past few weeks because it's doing so many other different kind of things to me now. Seems like it's satisfied torturing me in other ways, so it's letting up on the sitting some. It's just that's all I can make of it.
So the symptom imperative, the pain shifting,
I've not had a good week. I admit it. I told y'all that when we started. Just not had a good week this week. I had the MRI. Go ahead.
Is there a hierarchy in your pain? Is there like one thing that's worse than others? You speak of these new symptoms emerging. Arrange them hierarchically? One is more intense than another? One is primary, I guess you'd say, and the others are distractions. or is it all of them are of equal value, equal pain level?
Yeah, there is some difference this time in the left side of my low back. There's some kind of shocking and tingling sensations that I get in there that I haven't had before. Most of the problems I've had have been on the left side, but it's not exactly like that. So
now we know that that's what TMS would do. It'll come back at you with different feelings, different variations, different, you know, something to make you think that it's not the same thing as before, so it couldn't be TMS, you know? So that's one of the tricks, you know?
Yeah, let me give you another experience I had. Now, I missed you guys last week, so I had something happen the week before that. And I was helping someone move. Actually, they were more or less using my truck and my trailer to move, and I was helping as much as I could, and their house was a nightmare. Trash and junk, and it was a... I was helping someone out of an abusive situation. But anyway, there was no one else there to do it, and the place had to be cleaned up. And this was a big old double-wide mobile home. And I just, for some reason, I just reached and took a broom and started sweeping. And I started sweeping. I kept sweeping. I kept lifting. I kept picking up things from the floor, putting it in trash bags. It just kept going. And it the low back acted as though at first it was really going to do some terrible things to me. I just kept going. I remembered what Dr. Sarno said, you cannot hurt yourself. I remember reading about what Steve went through in his recovery. He just kept going. Just do it. And I did, and I just did it. And I swept for 2 hours, I swept, and I worked hard. And the person that was there I was helping knew of the problems I was having, even knows a lot about TMS because I've talked to him before a lot about it. Could not believe what they saw me doing. And it cautioned me at times. You know how people, if they know you got problems, they try to protect you. But I didn't listen. I cleaned that whole house. And I said, well, I don't know what I'm going to get for this. The next day was probably the only day in the past 3 to 4 months that I felt absolutely normal. It was like it was gone for that whole day. The next day, it was back a little. It took 3 or 4 days to get back to its normal old sad self, but it, you know, it did.
Oh, that sounds and, just like TMS.
But anyway, that's
wonderful.
We can make whatever we want out of that story. There it is. That's
so you changed.
That's a
you
great story.
You changed, Jason. You changed your conditioning. You had new experiences that you didn't have. So back to driving your truck. You are sitting in a truck for 45 minutes at a time, so I think that's great. But do you remember reading in this chapter, or was it the one before, where Dr. Sarno and Steve said, you cannot hurt yourself sitting, it's impossible.
Right.
Do you believe that?
Sitting is, yes, I do. Sitting is, he said, sitting is, what could be more benign than sitting? So, yes, I believe that. What could possibly be more benign than sitting?
Great, good, okay. That's great. So it sounds like you're doing great feats. You're changing the conditioning and just got to keep it up. Let me ask you something else. So I always recommend the Rahe Holmes list. When people say, I don't know what's bothering me, so I say, take a look at the Rahe Holmes list because that is the science behind Dr. Sarno. Have you ever looked at that list of life's events that cause TMS?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I've looked at it. I don't know. What book is it in? I've looked at so much.
You can just go to the wiki or Google Rahe Holmes and you'll find it. But have you identified what your emotional issues are that are causing your TMS?
Oh, yes, I have. I went over that with Herbie and him one night in detail.
Okay. Okay. You don't have to tell us, because I'm not going to tell anyone mine either.
abandonment, abusive issues in childhood and so forth. Oh, yeah. Really bad stuff.
I think the worst of them is the death of a spouse.
I've got some rage. Oh, I've got a lot of rage. It's a long, bad story.
We all have. Jason, we all have, and that's the point. Yeah. TMS is based upon rage. So something I just recently clicked with me from reading the past couple chapters is that Steve-O says that TMS is caused by abandonment, separation issues early in our childhood, out of the fetus. Okay, so and then the other thing is you don't have to do archaeology, emotional archaeology. So none of us are going to remember what happened in the hospital at our birth. So it's a given. Right. We all have that. So we just have to move forward and say, that is a given. We all were frightened when we were kids. We got lost and we didn't know where mommy and daddy was. I can remember three times when I was young, I felt lost. I didn't know where they were. But then it was okay. So that's a given. So it's the TMS knowledge that will set us free, knowing that it's the human condition. We all have that. Separation, move on. You know, it's just the way it is for not just you, but for all of us here tonight and the rest of humanity out there hopping around the globe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, end of rant.
Yeah, and I think Jay's. Okay, I think Jay's been work. I think you've been working on it now, Jay, for two or three months again now. Has it been a little longer?
Yeah, it's been since this episode. It happened to me July the 25th.
Okay. Okay.
That's
so
how long I've been fighting this thing this time.
Okay, and so you fighting it with mindfulness and you fighting it, the right way, right? Calming down the anger and just, fighting it with peacefulness and calmness and all that good stuff, right? The happiness, joy, and so forth.
That's right, and the readings, and trying to remember and apply what I've read, and that I understand, and I agree with most everything.
The daily reminders.
And whatever's going on, I can't give you a specific out of the top of my head, but, when I'm walking or exercising or riding or whatever, and it starts, then I try and remember something I've read, something I've heard that relates to that particular thing going on with me at the time. It
like
gives me some power, to fight it.
I like when you mentioned how you'll focus on another part of your body when you start hurting in one part of your body. That's a powerful antidote. Yeah. Okay. Good. Leonor wrote something here, and maybe we all can elaborate on it a little bit since her mic's messed up. She says, I just wanted to tell you.
Her mic's messed up, man?
Leonore's mic's messed up, so I'm going to say what she wrote in the meeting chat here. Yeah. She said, I just want to tell you that I've been able to recondition myself to exercise and not feel more pain, but I have not been able yet to recondition my old pain. Now, we need to know. Are you still staying with the program? Are you still sticking to what you've done to recondition the other pain? That would be the solution, right, Forrest? Tennis Tom, enjoy.
Reconditioning to the right. To what? Reconditioning to what?
She's reconditioned to one pain, but she's not reconditioned to another pain. So what would you tell her with that, Tom?
Find something you like to do that you prefer to do that isn't painful. Steve-O says, find a distraction that gives you pleasure.
Great. I love that. Forrest, you might
me too.
Okay, great. Bruce, you want to add anything in there?
Well, something that engrosses you, completely and grabs your attention so much that you don't have a chance to pay attention to the programmed responses.
Something you get your focus on, right?
I noticed this years ago when I was first starting, I heard all the time when I walked. But if I put my camera and tripod into the pack when I walked, sure, I'd hurt when I was walking to the site where I set up my camera. But when I set up the camera, it was a digital DSLR, and I had to go into the submenus, and I had to compose the picture. And I had to attach the camera and the tripod and frame it and concentrate on it. And while I was doing that, I didn't notice it, but the pain had gone away, so that when I walked on, when I broke down the photographic equipment, it was gone. See, awesome. You hold on to these things, don't you? It's like attachments. maybe you're trying to make up for that abandonment by latching on to these things with intense concentration. I don't know. I have to ask the psychiatric community. But I noticed just the other day, I wondered why I hurt when I walked downhill. And this is the intellect getting a hold of it. Well, why, whenever I walk uphill 800 feet to the top of this ridge, I don't hurt. But when I come back down, walking down back to the car, the pain builds. Well, when I had my relapse in 2007, I took a fall running downhill and landed on my left butt. And then it began. So I associate in my mind downhill motion with the beginning of the pain.
The downhill is a trigger.
It's a trigger, yeah. And it's as simple as that. At the time that I landed, I was in a high emotional state and really worked up, and I got, and that triggered the pain response again. That's how it came back. And so every time I went downhill, sure enough, it would hurt. It's not logical, it's irrational, and it's almost mechanical too, the way you're conditioned. You don't even need to go into these childhood issues. Maybe the childhood issues made you receptive to this kind of conditioning, but it's very mechanical. It's like every morning when I would get up, like Steve says in the Pop Heard Round the World, I'd hear a click in my foot, in my hip, and that would initiate the pain process for the day. It was like a green light. There's no connection between the popping sound and the pain. It just was like something I associated. I'm going to have a bad day because my back is popping. And there it would go from there, and it would just rise through the whole day. Now I hear a click and it doesn't bother me. Just like Steve says, I sometimes hear popping in my back or knees, but thinking nothing of it anymore. It's some type of ligament movement or synovial fluid expanding and popping across the joint, ligaments or bones. Who cares? Now I hear a click and it doesn't do that anymore. The conditioning is broken down.
Lost its power.
Yeah.
Correct. Forrest?
It's expectations, isn't it? It's what
you
expect.
Yes, it is. It's expecting, fearing, focusing on the situation, on the pain.
So that's anxiety,
it
isn't it? When you have expectations like that, if you're in an anxious mode.
I think we could equate the word focus with power.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're giving it power. You hit it right on the head, Jay. That's right.
Very true. Very true.
Did you want to elaborate on that, anything there, Forrest, on Eleanor's question?
I think that the advice we've had here has been great. I mean, people talk about finding a passion that they love and you know, something that engages them, that pulls them away, that changes the channel. I think that kind of like that video game that I was talking about earlier in the in the show. And I think you kind of have to prepare to do that for a while, in the sense that I mean, I think that's one of the most powerful things about Steve's story is that sometimes it does take a while. And I think the key is to enjoy your life in the meantime, because, you know, that it's, you don't want to let that go by you. I think take you have to enjoy the life while you're doing the healing. there's also great stuff going on in the chat room right now. Enjoy, do you want to talk about that a little bit, maybe? You've been talking to Lenore?
I love what Enjoy said in the chat room.
Well, Lenore was talking about having a problem with neck pain, and the first thing I said was kind of facetious. I said everybody with a child, an active child, has a pain in the neck, you know, because it just sort of comes with the territory. And I wasn't really kidding. I mean, there's some truth to that, but of course, a pain in the neck might be any number of things. And really, all you can do is just kind of really let yourself relax, do some mindful meditation, focus on that pain and say, what are you trying to tell me? What's going on with you? And then just give it some time. Let the answer surface. You know, you can't force it. If it doesn't want to talk yet, if it doesn't trust you, you're going to have to do some building of trust, but eventually, like what my experience is that the parts want to talk, and they don't want to be carrying this burden all by themselves. So if you're willing to listen and you're willing to say, well, what can I do to help in this situation? What would you like to be doing instead of whatever is a pain in the neck? You know, then gradually they trust you and they let go of all this stuff they've been carrying because they can see, they can feel that you are willing to be the responsible leader in your life, and you're not going to just leave them with unresolved issues. Does that make sense to people? Because I always worry that I haven't been very clear.
Yes, it does.
What she's talking about, is the IFS therapy, and
it's not just IFS. There's lots of different ways to do parts work. Just the idea that we have the real us, but we also have lots of minority opinions in there. That think this and think that, and according to IFS, they were created at a time when we needed them to help us with trauma. But when the trauma's passed, our real self, our adult self, can go in there and say, "Look, I'm here to help. I want you to be able to let go of that burden of responsibility, and I'll take over again. And thank you for helping, but you can let go now." And my experience, they do it. They do it. Wow. They say, "Oh, okay," and they're gone. But I guess everybody's different. But I just think that it's hard to get the concept that this could be going on inside you. But Freud said it, Jung said it, Eric Byrne in transactional analysis, same thing, Fritz Perls in Gestalt therapy, same thing. A whole plethora of brand new therapies are based on the idea that we have parts. And frankly, I can see it in the Bible. I can see it in the Bible, because what the heck is something that's inside of you that's causing you endless trouble? And what is that except a devil that needs to be cast out? And the thing is that in IFS, you're not thinking of them as a real devil. You're thinking, and I don't know anything about that. That's theology, and I'm not going into that. But what it is, it's a part that's causing trouble, and it needs to be helped. And you know, I mean, when I think about the Bible, I don't see Jesus being anything but kind and sending those parts on their way.
That's awesome. That is good. Awesome.
Good. That's awesome.
Socrates said that he would always consult with his daimon, whenever he was coming up with his greatest thoughts. And that was what we would call the true self.
Exactly. That makes a lot of sense, Bruce. I knew Socrates said something like that, but...
Yeah, but the daimon. Yeah. Well, that's the first time anybody said that, too. So he was on the ground floor with these sort of things.
Well, I remember...
Probably 10,000 years before him, but we've lost track of him. So it was wonderful to hear that. It's been going
Plato
on.
Plato wrote it down. He was the first guy to write about those things.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the... I'm going to change just for one second, and it was about breaking the associations on page 208 of Steve's book here, breaking the associated patterns. And I was getting a lot of anxiety when I didn't get to exercise, when I didn't get to go out and, you know, let the id play, you know. And Bruce had actually recommended something to me about exercise at a different time. Don't exercise at the same time you always exercise. You know, Herbie, go out there and exercise at a different time. And I went out there instead, and I always like doing it in the mornings, but I went out there that night and exercised, and the anxiety completely left immediately.
Wow.
And it was breaking an associated pattern. And I think that's a good way to, you know, shift the pain, and maybe get an aha moment too, you know?
Yeah, well, you don't need to lie on the psychiatric couch and reveal your deep inner self. There are simple mechanical things you can do that break these patterns.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't have to reassemble a new self or something. It's as simple
as
getting up early and going out for a walk at 8 instead of walking at 5.
Well, we got so many different styles and ways we can come at it, and that's the beauty of what we're doing here, is giving so many different angles that we can come in at it, that, you know, if one angle don't work, try the parts angle. If the parts, if something there doesn't work, then try this other angle, right? And it's a beautiful thing. I love the way everybody here, Tom, Forrest, Bruce, Jay, enjoy. Everybody's got a different angle. And, you know, through all these angles, whoever it is can listen to this podcast and use something that will help them. Right.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, I love this idea of changing your patterns and doing all that stuff. But my problems were so ingrained in me that I had to do something to dig them out. I had to do it. And I tried a number of times with therapists and counselors, and none of them got me at all. They didn't have a clue, and if they came anywhere near to where I was really coming from, they ran. They ran for it. I'm serious. I mean, I came from a really, really. I come from a twisted family. They are really twisted, these people. And if I make it, I'll be the first person in generations who turns into someone who is capable of happiness. I think I already am. But, you know, it hasn't been that long, so I'm not, you know, not saying I couldn't have setbacks. But nobody else in my family is happy. Everybody is miserable. Even my brother, who would probably come the closest of all, but he sits there where he's got 2 or 3 televisions stacked on top of each other, and he watches sports all day long, and then he goes out and he does exactly what a lot of people have been talking here, plays tennis for hours, like he's on the dead run from himself all day long. Now, for him, that seems to work. More power to him. It didn't work for me. I had to get into this part stuff, and I totally agree. It's not for everybody, but I just keep bringing it up because when I hear people being stuck, you know, I think, well, you know, you don't have to spend the rest of your life talking to your parts, for goodness sake. You know, chances are good, just a couple of little conversations and awareness, and you're going to be fine. The same as for a lot of people, it's yeah, change your practice. Change your practice. Whatever works.
And also the notion of balance. I think balance, the more I think about it, the more I realize that balance is important. You know, you need to, I think what I love about parts therapy is the way that it teaches you to listen to various parts of yourself. But, you know, it's sometimes you just need to move and you don't need to listen. So you need to do a little bit of everything.
That's awesome. Yeah. Tom, you want to hit on anything?
You know, I've been hearing about this parts therapy. Enjoy. You sound really happy, actually, and I'm assuming maybe your discovery of parts. Okay, but I haven't said that. Can you give us a brief description of how does it relate to TMS, or let's say to Jason's back or my butt or whoever? How do we work with it for our particular TMS?
Well, what's happening is that the part is carrying the pain for you. So if you go in, talk to the part, listen to it, ask it what you can do for it, lift its burdens, take responsibility for your life instead of it having to carry that pain for you, and then that part is free and the pain goes away. Tom, can I say something? I've been on the forum on TMS Help since 2005, and you might not remember me, but I used to be Cheery Query.
Yeah, I remember that. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was a real bitch. I'm serious. I was a troll. I mean, I didn't set out people, but boy, I enjoyed digging at them. I really did.
I think we all have that in us. I can be a real asshole. But it's funny. I think, I recall that. But after you left the forum, you sent me an email saying, Tom, I think you'd really enjoy this other forum where you can say whatever you want and no one takes offense. And I remember that now. And I said, I should have written it down. I never did go to it because, okay.
Sure, exactly what forum that was. I think I have an idea of it, actually. But it was good for me. But actually, they didn't have any solutions. All they did is to me that you can be with a whole bunch of really troubled people, and a lot of them are still good people. They're not, I mean, they just lose it, that's all.
Yeah, well, I remember I saw Dr. Donald Dubin passed away, but he was Dr. Schechter's therapist. He appears on his tapes, and I did a few sessions with him when I was down in Southern California, and I came in third or fourth session, and Don said to me, Tom, if I told you I was a big asshole, what would you say? And I said, Don, I don't know, it kind of caught me off guard. I think we all have it within us to be an asshole or a bitch or whatever at times, you know. I guess if it's in moderation or when needed, it's all right. And it's trying to disguise those parts of us. I think that's what gives us TMS, the false image that we don't have those. That's what TMS is about, is hiding the shadow emotional self and not, being aware of it.
You're only as sick as your secrets. There's never truer words been spoken. Not that you need to tell everybody in the world your business, you know. But when it's appropriate, yeah, you're only as sick as your secrets. But you see, the thing is that mine was not in moderation, right? I mean, by the time you met me in 2005, I was a big improvement, you know? But because I've been working on this, you know, all my life. But my parents, they were a piece of work. I mean, they were a piece of work, the pair of them. And my sister is completely crippled by TMS. And it just goes on and on, you know. So I want to up to this in myself, because I feel like if I can do it for myself, then in a sense it's a triumph, and it proves that family dysfunction doesn't have to go on generation after generation. There are actually choices involved.
Yeah, that was Steve-O's point of the pattern. Change your experience. Change the conditioning. So once again, let me go back to that parts thing. Since I don't, for instance, my right hip arthritis, is that the part we're talking about? That's the part.
Yeah, it would be with me, because you can have arthritis and no pain. You know, I mean, I had a doctor say to me when I was about 45, he said, you've got arthritis in your spine, right? He said, there's nothing we could do about that. Can you imagine somebody saying that to you? Luckily, I was already reading Dr. Sarno, and I knew that was baloney. I could just feel it in my... This is not true. Now, I've got a bit of arthritis in my hands, and when it starts to flare up, I know what it is. It's something trying to get my attention.
Hey, Tom, let me take a whack at answering what you were just saying. I would say that, so, I mean, parts therapy is like, it's a different part of your mind. You know, like, part of your mind is happy. You go to the holidays, and part of your mind is happy because you're with your family, and another part of your mind is angry because you're with your family, or, you know, because so-and-so is getting on your nerves. So it's just like different parts of your personality. The way that it fits into TMS healing, in my opinion, is similar to the way that psychoanalysis fits into TMS healing at Dr. Sarno's practice. So, you know, 20% of the people who, 80% of the people who come to him can get by with just an educational program that includes a little bit of journaling and essay writing. But then 20% need something deeper. And if someone feels like they need something deeper, it seems like one of the wonderful things about psychoanalysis that Dr. Sarno uses is that it teaches you how to listen to yourself, teaches you how to listen to kind of your inner voice. And I think parts therapy does the same thing. You say, oh, okay, there's part of me that's really, really pissed at being with my mom. What's that part of me feeling? Why is it so pissed? And you listen to that part, and you try to understand it better, and then you try to understand, what does it mean? What would it take to get that part of you a little bit less angry? So that's just one approach.
So I would talk to part of the brain or part of the butt? Where's the part?
Part of the brain.
Oh, okay, yeah. Gray matter. In the gray matter. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Okay,
well, you know,
thank
something
you.
In my opinion, like in IFS, they say that you're born with this parts, and they only become activated when there's trauma and they need to take over. Quite frankly, I think they're figments of our imagination. But I think we all do it, you know. I mean, that's what I think of them of, is they're not real. They're not real people. They're just parts that have some kind of long, long ago, and you know, and they got to keep coming back and giving me grief and giving me pain. And you know, the whole point of the true self is that you don't hate them, you know, and they're not trying to hurt you. You listen to them, and you're interested in them, and you have compassion for them. But when they're ready, you let them go. You know, you're not 2 years old anymore. You're not 10 years old anymore when something horrible happens. And if you can be the adult guru in your own life, then you can let this stuff from the past go. And I'm sure that if you have the world's greatest psychiatrist and you have 8 years and thousands upon thousands of dollars, that'll work harm. But I don't have that, and so this is the next step. Well, in fact, I think personally, to tell you the honest truth, I think it's better, because I've, like with my foster kids, I met a lot of psychiatrists that don't know what they're talking about, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's not for everyone. What I've noticed from being on the list is that some people are getting really excited about it, and it speaks to them. So I figure, you know, like some people want that therapy, and this style of therapy seems to work for them. And the idea is, it's just like that psychoanalysis that Dr. Sarno uses. And others, they want to just want to power through the pain and ignore the pain and God bless them. Whatever works.
Absolutely. I mean, nobody who feels like that is going to bother joining a mailing list, you know, unless it's like a powering through the pain mailing list. Okay, they'll do that, hey? But they're not gonna listen to the crazy parts lady and sign up for the mailing list, right? It's only people who have not been able to shift it as effectively as they would have liked. Like I've had one spontaneous remission after another, but within a few months something else comes back. And even on a day-to-day basis, until I really started doing parts work, I was not always a happy person. Sometimes I was, but a lot of times I was depressed. And I had no idea what I was depressed about. And now I can sit myself down and I can say, okay, who's depressed? And sure as heck, somebody pops up and tells me about it. And then we can talk, and I can help them, and they can go on their way happy. And then I'm happy, too. And it's just, you know, just huge for me. But absolutely, of course it's not for everybody. A lot of people don't need this. A lot of people might need it one day, but they're not quite ready for it now, whatever. It's just that, yeah, I'm the crazy parts lady. What the heck?
When you're focusing on your mental part, so you're doing what TMS, what Dr. Sarno recommends, is think psychologically. You are taking away the focus from your TMS symptom. Depression is an affective symptom, and you are talking to your brain, which is what Dr. Sarno says that is the number one thing to do. Quit focusing on the physical. Think psychologically. So that's what you're doing with part, I believe it sounds like.
Exactly.
That's absolutely true. I had forgotten that part. So, yeah, good reminder.
Leonor has something to say. She said, with IFS, we can find faster parts and make peace with them.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get that in there.
You want
to finish, Enjoy?
No, like I said, I'm finished. I feel bad, you know, because I feel like I'm carrying on. But the trouble is, you know, when you hear somebody and they're having a hard time and they're in pain, you just want to offer it. So that's what I'm doing.
No, you don't feel bad for nothing. You're doing a great job. You are helping a lot of people, and we really appreciate what you're saying and how you're telling us. And because, hey, before any of us here ever heard of Dr. Sarno, when we first heard of it, I'm sure every one of us took the book and threw it across the room just like Steve did, you know? So, I believe in the parts therapy huge. So we love you here, Enjoy. We really appreciate you doing everything you do. You ain't the crazy parts lady. You're the smart parts lady.
Exactly.
Parts lady.
A little crazy.
Well, I was wanting to hit on something.
So encouraged.
God bless you. This is a conditioning thing, and Steve's got it on page 205. I think it's like the fourth, near the bottom of the page there. He says, positioning for comfort promotes a conditioned response. And he was talking about how he would position himself with a pillow. And instantly, you know, as soon as he felt better with that pillow underneath his leg, he would, it promoted a conditioned response. And from that day forth, he always had to have that pillow. Some of us position ourselves in cars, try to turn certain ways so that, and then if we get a certain way that we sit and we feel better, then we get conditioned that certain way will help us a little bit. And I wanted to just say that, you know, maybe it might help Jay some about the positioning ourselves in certain ways can become conditioned responses. And if you don't position yourself in those ways from thereafter, then you will have pain. It's because it's a conditioned response. I just wanted to throw that in there. Yeah. I did have one more thing, Bruce, before we get to the last part. It was the phantom limb. It was the phantom limb, Bruce. Remember that?
Yeah.
He says, right, the Phantom Limb. Anyway, the people get their legs cut off, and, you know, everybody here knows it. Everybody on the phone has heard about it. I have pages on there, but he talks about what we all know. How somebody will get their leg cut off, you don't have to get it amputated or something, but they'll still feel pain in that leg, in that part, like as if the leg is still there. And, you know, it's the brain, obviously, creating the pain. Anybody want to elaborate on that? I mean, that pretty much tells how, you know, we can have pain that's associated with nothing.
I've heard one way they get rid of that, one of the techniques they use to get rid of phantom pain in an amputated limb is to create a box that creates the other limb via mirrors. So the patient sees the limb there, and then it ceases to hurt. It's broken.
That's so strange.
Isn't it? Yes.
Bizarre.
Wow.
But that's one way of dealing with phantom limb syndrome. It reassures the patients that there is a limb there, and therefore it shouldn't be hurting. It's like it's been, it's still hurt from the, I guess, the amputation process. Those neural pathways are still active, but when you get the reassurance that there actually is a limb in that place, it stops.
Wow.
That's mechanical. That's not going deep. That's classic conditioning, isn't it?
Well, and it seems like the mind-body, I mean, it's such a mind-body connection thing that information coming in your eyes can somehow cool down this limb. It's fascinating. Like, what would the eyes have to do with pain nerves? It's crazy. I love it.
Yeah, well, we still don't know how we formulate language in our brain. Some of the most simple things. How do we distinguish the difference between a square and a circle? How is that done? Well, there's a famous theorem formulated by, Sapir and Whorf, who were doing studies of Navajo children. And they would present before them a circle, piles of shapes, piles of circles, piles of triangles, piles of squares. Well, and they were asked the children to arrange them according to the shape. Well, it just so happens that there's no name for a triangle in the Navajo language. So on a perfectly random basis, they would place the triangles in the circles or the squares 50-50, because they could not conceptualize that shape without the word in existence. They did not see it. That's sort of like Candace Pert and Columbus's ships not being visible to the Indians, because they had never conceptualized such a thing as a galleon before. This gets out into almost occult realms, doesn't it? What I thought was interesting too, when Steve talks about the continuing protection of an area formed by tensing it, he noticed himself unconsciously doing that in places where the pain had disappeared. And that's a reinforcement too, isn't it?
That's a huge part of how the knot that the pain actually left. It was centered in my lower back. When it finally left, I stood up, and I could. It was almost like mentally, I was telling myself in my mind, for the pain in my mind now, like psychic or something, I wasn't even saying it. I was just thinking it. And then the tenseness in the lower back just left. And it was like, man, I'm healed. You know, it was like, I did it. All this work, it worked. And when I read that in Steve's chapter, it really opened up my eyes that, you know, somebody else is knows about it too.
Somebody's been there besides yourself. It's like...
Yeah, it was really.
It wasn't physical.
Oh yeah, buddy, it opened up a whole book.
I think we all have problems with that. Probably the basic problem, if we could just finally 100% understand this is not physical, just because we show a little degenerative disc, a little desiccated disc, a little fissure here and there. The Sarno said the gray hairs of the spine. And 17, 18 years ago, when I had all the same basic problems, even though it's a little different now, but I still had really the same basic stuff in the same basic area. And the MRIs, CAT scan, and all that showed absolutely nothing. And this time, of course, I'm an old man now. And it shows a little, as he said, gray hairs of the spine, a little degenerative stuff. But it's mild. And for my age, it's nothing that any other 70-year-old wouldn't have. But my brain still wants to come back and say, you know, this thing just may be physical now. So I'm contending with that, too. So,
Jay, is that because someone sold you the spinal degeneration theory as the cause behind your pain at some point? Did they put that into your head?
Some sure. Yeah, these doctors.
You know, you hear about people, they'll say something like, your words really hurt me. You kill me with your words. You know, and we can, in arguments and fusses and fights that we have with our relatives, their words just tear us to pieces. But we don't think about the words that come from those doctors. When those doctors will say, you know, that you'll probably have that the rest of your life. It's probably going to, you know, lay you down where you won't be able to walk. It sinks into us the same way. Those words are that powerful, you know?
Sure they are.
We have, and that's what we...
The worst thing we can do is actually run these tests and have this stuff where we would be better off if we never did see any of that stuff.
You hit that on the head. There was a seagull story I saw somewhere. Enjoy.
What's that? Oh, my seagull story? Okay, yeah. Well, that was one time my husband had rescued a seagull, and we were sitting in our living room, and my husband and the seagull, it was a big seagull, he was sitting on my husband's knee. And a friend of ours came tearing through the door with a big story. He's about 20 years old at this time, and he was kind of a nephew of mine. And he started telling us this story, and he was just going full blast and waving his arms and talking. And all of a sudden, the seagull flapped, and he just about went 6 feet in the air, this guy. I mean, not the seagull, the guy, because he had not seen the seagull. He had not seen that seagull. He said, you've got a seagull on your knee. My husband said, yeah. He just about died. You know? So, I mean, to me, like, you see what you expect to see. You see what you're programmed to see. You see what you're conditioned to see. You see what you've always seen before. And if there's a seagull on somebody's knee, you don't necessarily see it.
Like the Navajo children.
Just like the not seeing the ship. There'd never been a ship before, so it took a while. Yeah, I mean, they had big boats, but they didn't have that kind of ship, you know?
Yep.
the mind is incredibly powerful. I don't think we can ever underestimate what it can do to us and for us.
Oh, that's awesome. That's beautiful. Yeah. It's true. The pain clinics for Bruce?
Yeah.
What you got about the pain clinics?
Steve has nothing good to say about pain clinics.
Okay.
Proliferated across the United States. He says there are 4,000 of them. And he quotes Mark Sofer, MD, in personal correspondence to him, saying that the pain clinics are part of the problem. They perpetuate the belief in infirmity. Most of the patients I see who have been in pain clinics are forever lost. They have been completely so completely conditioned to believe they have a physical structural problem that they cannot open their minds. The best benefits the pain clinics can deliver, Steve says, are analgesics to dull the sharp edge of the most cutting pains as the body begins to realign and heal itself. The danger is in the addiction to the avoidance of any buried conflict and for the desire of the pleasure through analgesia. In other words, getting hooked on the pain pills as an end in themselves and never progressing any further in the healing. I've noticed those pain clinics sprouting up around here. There are several down here on Laurel now. I'd never seen such a thing before. And now it's like the McDonald's. These things are
standardized
marketing program being implemented
everywhere. I'm sure it is.
They get together and talk about this too.
And I bet drug stores will be surrounding that.
I know I got into all kinds of trouble on the forum by a guy from a pain clinic who didn't like me saying what Steve says. And he says, "You're not an expert." I said, "Okay, I'm not an expert. I won't argue with you."
It don't matter. I mean, my Lord. I mean, it's common sense, dude. Tennis Tom, you've been through a lot.
If you take pain pills, the receptors in your neural pathways are going to atrophy. So you're going to to be taking more and more of them to get the same effect. Whether you're moderated by a trained professional or not. And this is the result of, it's called addiction. I mean.
What happened? The receptors does what, Bruce? What did it say?
They degenerate. That's why a drug addict has to take more and more. And one of the reasons people become addicted, at least according to Gabor Mate, is that those receptors were damaged early on during early childhood development during the first 6 years. So you give a person like that a drug and he's going to take it all the time just to feel normal. This is the first time in his life he's felt human, in fact. So addiction for him is not a pleasure, it's a necessity, a psychological necessity. I can't see these pain clinics being really good myself.
That's the Willie Nelson effect. Willie said he didn't smoke dope to get high, he smoked it to get normal.
Yeah, well, that's the difference between an addict and a user, a recreational user. A recreational user uses something once and says, "Oh, that's fine." But an addict can't stop.
That's right, you know, and we're conditioned as a society, as a whole, everybody, you know, that, you know, you're hurt, go get pain medicine for it. You know, as society in general, we're not born, we're not grown up to if you start having pains in your body in certain areas, to start thinking about, you know, I might be having these issues, or that I might need to go out and have fun. I might need to start putting more joy in my life. I might need to stop being so serious about, you know, certain things. We're not told that. And then now I look around Rome, Georgia here, and we got 5 pain clinics. They're 5 stories high.
Yeah, they're
full. And then they just came up in the last 2 or 3 years, and they are packed out, brother. And I'm not, you know, we know that TMS pain is real. It's real pain. I think Dr. Sarno said it's the worst pain you can have. There's reasons for pain medication, but at the same time, the education, the TMS therapy is what heals, you know?
Our culture, we're fortunate enough that we can afford all these treatments, surgeries, and I don't know, someday when we figure out this economy is running on fumes and all goes in the tank, we're not going to be able to afford it anymore, and I think we'll have to go back to the old ways and treat things we won't be able to afford all this stuff.
We assume there's a mechanical or a chemical way of solving every problem. We're a very mechanistic, materialistic society.
And science.
A pseudoscience, a false science, not real science. But yeah. That's the danger of the mentality that people have developed, I think.
Well, it's also the chapter is talking about conditioning, and just watching TV casually today, there's a commercial. It pretended to be a government agency. It's not to get beyond SSI. It says if you're not sure if you have a disability, give us a call, and pretty much we'll find a disability for you. Mental or physical. So I know a lady, she just had her second knee replacement. My neighbor, back in the hospital, got an infection. I know another guy, he was in the military for a month and then got booted out for bringing a six-pack home, and but he still qualifies for Veterans Administration benefits, and he's had one hip, one knee, and he's looking forward to, last time he's like, Tom, I'm getting my other knee done in a week or so. So our whole culture is oriented that, mechanical replacement part surgery is better than God-given parts, whoever gave them to us, Darwin, whatever. It's the whole culture. The whole culture is conditioning everybody that they are weak, and that Walgreens has an answer, and versus the opposite of what Dr. Sarno has preached for years, that we're strong, the problem is in our mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, enjoy what, guys? Austin, so I'm going to check out, but we'll see you all next week. Love you all.
Okay, bye, Enjoy.
Bless you.
Bye, Enjoy. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks for coming. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, with that being said, guys, I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. It's been awesome, the conditionings. So many different ways to you can be conditioned. You can just bend, get a sharp pain in your back, and you're instantly conditioned. You can be conditioned over time. You can be conditioned like the Pavlov dogs. So there's the conditioning is unlimited in the ways we could say you can be conditioned. But the knowledge of the truth is what's going to set you free from the conditioning. It's Dr. Sarno's truth. It's Dr. Sarno's books, Healing Back Pain, Mind Over, the Mind-Body Connection, and the other books. Get them and learn the truth. Stop running around thinking that you got to have a pain pill or a fifth of liquor every time you hurt. Now, there ain't nothing wrong with a drink. Right, Tom? But anyway, God bless y'all.
Absolutely.
there you go. We appreciate everybody listening. And we're going to call that a night.